take real estate as a shot or as a fully stocked cooler? This is the 5 o'clock somewhere real estate investor podcast. We're bringing common sense back to real estate investment. So crack open your beverage of choice, sit back and relax, and allow us to learn you a thing or two.
Welcome to It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere Real Estate Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about seller credit, something that's becoming popular in the It used to be popular, then it went away for a while, and now it's back, and it's actually bleeding into the investment world. Stay tuned.
We are sponsored by Title Assurance and Escrow, a title company here in Cordova that does all of our closings, title work, escrows, and we only use Title Assurance and Escrow. That relationship is very important because we can get things done for our investors quickly and easily. So to speak with Title Assurance and Escrow, call 901-737-3332. Ask for Chris or April.
All right. Welcome back to It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere Real Estate Podcast. This is Brett Bernard. In the room with me is Jeff McNett, Nick Gibson. I'm sorry, what was your name again? Richard?
I'm the British
the
prick.
Richard the British prick. Actually, Richard's our producer, but we have an extra mic today, so he begged us to let him come on with us, so we said, okay, fine.
Yes, I really begged, didn't I?
So Richard Roy is our producer and our marketing guy, so all the beautiful things here on our website and this podcast is all put together by him. So today we're going to get into, contact us at 901-692-7401 or go to our website, mymemphisinvestmentproperties.com. So today I want to talk about seller credits. Jeff, you're dealing with a client. Seller credit. And seller credits, just the basic term, is buyers up until about 2021 would make an offer on a house and then would put in, seller pay 3% of buyer's closing cost, or give the buyer a $4,000 closing cost credit. To where basically the offer's for $140,000 and you ask for $4,000 credit, then the net sale's $136,000. And those buyers would ask for that because they would use that to buy down a rate. They'd use it to cover some of their closing costs or some of their title fees or whatever, prepays, insurance, and stuff like that. Then in 2021, that just kind of went away because the market got so insane after COVID that people started asking for it, and sellers were like, nope. And then the very next day, they'd sell the house for more than they had it listed for with no credits. So that turned that credit away. It just kind of bounced away. But let's use your client, Jeff, as an example.
Well, my client didn't necessarily come off the sales price. She just asked the builder his asking price plus. Well, we ended up $2,500 over.
Right.
Now, what I was going to ask you is, it always an issue if I've got a sales price of $165,000 and the seller are all for $167,500, seller $2,500 credit? How often is that an issue with an appraisal?
Well, that's always the drawback. So the offer is $167,500 on each house with a $5,000 seller credit back to your buyer. That makes her net $162,500, which she's paying. But then she can take that $5,000, apply it to prepays, buy down her interest rate or her points or whatever. So it's a good strategy. But in this case, they appraise at $165,000.
Correct.
Instead of $167,500. So now the seller has a dilemma. You're under contract for a $5,000 credit, but it didn't appraise for what you wanted it to. So you have to either A, lower the price, and basically the seller gets $2,500 less, and the net to your client's $160,000, or you just reduce the seller credit and it balances on both sides.
Well, that's what we did. We just reduced the seller credit to $2,500, and she agreed.
Right. So your client still got the house net $162,500, but she only got a $2,500 credit from the builder that she can apply to whatever she wants to. I don't know if it's enough to buy down her rate, but it could go to, all of her closing costs and attorney's fees and all that bit. I'm dealing with one now where client made an offer of $140,000. I went back to the seller, and the seller said, sure. I'll take 140. That's what I want for it. Then he came back this morning and said, well, can we do it at 145 and I'll give him a $5,000 credit? At first, I'm like, well, Terry, why would you want to do that? It makes no sense. But the rationale is this. Terry's working in a neighborhood where he's got a bunch of homes that he's going to buy and he's going to rehab and he's going to sell. So anybody that's wanting to do that, think about this. Let's say you go into a neighborhood that's run down and you're the first guy on the street to buy and rehab a house. But you're going to buy three or four more on that street. So what do you want to do? You want to set your comps as high as you possibly can for your future rehabs on that street.
So he's bumping his appraisals up to
right.
get a better
So what price. He's doing is when that sale closes, even though my client's really only going to pay $140 for the house and the $5,000 is going to go to her closing costs or her prepays or whatever.
On paper, he's showing
on
higher
paper,
sales prices.
On paper, it's going to show a sales price of $145,000 that closed. So that then sets the bar for that street. Or for, you know, those blocks.
So he's usually getting 165. Is he building a smaller house or is it just
only? It's a rehab. It's a rehab.
Oh, he's rehabbing. Okay.
Yeah. It's one that sat on the market. He didn't want to, he just wouldn't give it to me. He wouldn't let me list it. Kept putting it out there and he couldn't sell. We gave it to me and I sold it in 2 days. But that's the reason why he's doing that. And that the seller credit, if it's structured properly, is a win-win for the buyer and the seller. Typically, a seller credit is a loss for the seller, a gain for the buyer. But in that situation, they were able to establish the comp where they wanted it and give the buyer a credit, and the buyer still gets the same price they were going to pay before. Now, the downside of that is she's getting a loan. So guess what? She's getting a loan based on $145,000, so her costs are going to go up. But she's also getting $5,000 to pay those costs. So I don't know if it's a negative. I'll have to wait to see how it shakes out. So as far as seller credits are concerned, I see it coming back. I was very surprised to see it bleeding into the investment world because typically if I had a buyer, an investor that wanted to buy a home and he said, well, that's, you know, put in there, I want $3,000 from the seller for closing costs. I always tell him, no, you're an investor. Why are you going to ask another investor to give you his money to help you buy this house? And that was always the standard. That was what it was acceptable. And that seller credit was used and saved for the owner-occupant market. But in this case, I'm watching offers come in and I'm looking at listings where there's language in there from a seller. We'll pay up to $3,500 for a buyer's closing costs, or a buyer asking for 3% or buying asking for $5,000.
What do you think that's for? You think money's just getting tight for people now? Or
it's the cost
rates
of money.
Are going up,
think about
cost
it.
Of money.
Cost of money is expensive right now because of interest rates. So if you can buy a property and your cost to buy that property is going to be $10,000, but you can get $5,000 of it back, you're making a better deal for yourself. But to make it fair for a seller, you've got to be able to balance that with that seller. Because if not, so what you're doing is you're giving them what they want, but then ask them to give you money back. You've got to bump that cost up. Now, the negative to that, what if it doesn't appraise? That's a seller's risk. All right, you go under contract agreeing to give somebody $5,000, then all of a sudden it doesn't appraise for what the contract price was, then there's an argument to be made that you could legitimately force that contract through and force the seller to put the $5,000. Still, my argument would simply be no. I think is if it doesn't appraise for that price, at that point, your contract's contingent on appraisal, therefore that contract's null and void. You got to renegotiate it. You got to do an amendment or redo a new contract. But there is an argument to be made that that seller could be on the hook for that $5,000. If you have a good agent and the agent writes the contract the right way with the right contingencies in it, which we know 90% of them won't, you'll never get caught in that crisis. You'll always have an out. Both sides will have an out to renegotiate that deal properly.
Yeah, because Richard didn't have to do what he did yesterday. He wasn't going to be forced to do the $5,000.
No, but, you know, and
because of the appraisal contingency in the contract.
When
correct?
I called him about it and told him the situation, he says, well, is she going to walk away? I said, I don't know. I said, but let me get it. We're going to get in touch with him. Here's what I'm proposing. I'm proposing we just reduce the seller credit by $2,500 and balance it, right? So both sides are still where they want to be. I said, and if she says, no, not good enough, I'll come back to you and we'll get more creative and figure something out. So luckily it worked out. Christine's happy. Phil's happy. The deal's still on track. Everything worked out.
I don't know how happy she is. It's acceptable to her, though. You know?
Well, look, I mean,
still a good deal for her.
It's a damn good deal. You're all in at $162,500 and you're getting $1,695 a month rent on a brand new construction home with a 1-year builder warranty.
And the house will be worth $170,000 next year.
And that's the thing. It all goes back to knowing your numbers. Do the numbers still work? Then, okay, it's a win-win for everybody.
These new construction properties exceed the 1% all day long, and they are brand new from the concrete to the shingles. There's nothing. The only thing that's not new is the lot and the grass on it. It's the original lot. Everything else is brand new. So if you can produce or break the 1% rule of a brand new construction home and get a builder credit out of it on top of it, that's a slam dunk. Slam dunk in my book.
So everything you've said so far is indicating the shift from a seller's market to more equilibrium in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Now, where do you see it in 6 months? I mean, if you were to give me the expectation for a seller and a buyer today, where do you see those expectations would be in 6 months?
So we're talking maybe January 1st, 2025?
Yeah.
Do I need to remind you about the whole bottle of scotch bet on this year's predictions?
Was it just one? One ball?
I brought him a blue. He got his bottle of blue down at the dock.
The short answer to Richard's question is it depends on the outcome of the election and if they ever decide to start lowering these interest rates like they promised 0.75 last January.
That's the obvious answer. I want you to give me a prediction.
Here's what I think. And this is my honest gut feeling. Trump wins the election and he does everything right and turns the economy on its head by January 1 and things are just smoking and going great for everybody. Interest rates just don't drop automatically, right? The Fed is a separate arm that has to make that decision. But if the economy takes off in the right direction and inflation starts to tamp down and come down, then you'll watch them. They're never going to drop them as low as they were, but I see us back in the 5s, 5.5, maybe 4.5, because the only reason why they keep raising rates or keeping rates up is because inflation is still out of control, right? It's still expensive to get gas, expensive to buy milk. It's expensive to do anything. So until that's under control, which is a product of the economy, interest rates aren't coming down. But I think consumer confidence right now, or let's just say investor confidence, is starting to pick up. And I can only say that because my phone is getting more active, right? In the last couple months, I mean, I'm sitting at home twiddling my thumbs and calling investors and pushing out properties, trying to make a deal happen. Now I'm starting to get calls the other direction, which tells me that investor confidence is coming up. And maybe it could be because they think Trump's going to win. Maybe because they think that we've hit the worst of it. It's only going to get better from here. I want to get in before things get so good that the prices and everything start jumping. There can be a number of factors why. But I believe that 2025 is going to be a banner year for our team, number one, and for the investment market, because I've never been through this bad of a market. I went through one very early on, and the following year it bounced out. I mean, immediately January 1, it just took off. So I truly believe that we've made it through the dark tunnel and there's light at the other end for us.
Inflation is trickling down a little bit. It's just not noticeable enough for most Americans to make a difference.
I mean,
But it is coming down.
Yeah, if you look at specifically groceries, inflation on groceries last year was much higher than it's been this year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, so it is getting better. It's just taking too long.
It is. Well, if you leave something alone long enough in government, it'll eventually either completely collapse or fix itself. You know, the inflationary issue is not being solved by anybody in Washington. It's just a product of the time that we've been dealing with this and the pushback from the public on the inflation. So with all that said, without getting too political, because we're not a political show, I believe that, yes, 2025 is going to be a great year, and I think that's why some of my investors are getting active now. They want to get in while there's a ton of inventory in the market. I can still get a good deal. I can still go in and negotiate, give somebody asking and get $3,000 back at closing. Because, you know, look, most investors would love to get most of their cash out of these properties. A good way to get a small portion of your out-of-pocket cash out of a property is get a seller credit. However you do it. And if you spend $5,000 for the house more on a loan and the builder gives you or the seller gives you a $5,000 credit, then you just borrowed that money from the bank again, regardless. That cash is still coming back to you. It's, if your closing cost is 10 grand and the seller puts up 5,000 of that, you're only coming to deal with five. You still have 5 grand of your cash sitting in the bank that you didn't use. So it's still a very good strategy. A lot of sellers get motivated to do that. I mean, it makes sense. I got an owner-occupant house for $599,000, and the seller is giving a $30,000 closing credit to the buyer. It's a big house. It's a beautiful house. $30,000 to attract buyers. Now, for a buyer buying that level of a house, they're going to come out of pocket $40,000 or $50,000. So guess what? Half the cash they need is being put up by the seller. So anyway, that's just a strategy, I think, that sellers and buyers need to use, at least currently, to get deals done, get the ball rolling, and get into the real estate world.
It's a win-win.
Win-win. There's no reason, if you're listening to this show, not to pick up the phone and call 901-692-7401 or go to MyMemphisInvestmentProperties.com and get in touch with us, because we can show you how to effectively buy in Memphis, make money in Memphis, and build a sustainable, functioning, profitable portfolio.
For more common sense real estate tips, listen and subscribe at 5 o'clock somewhere podcast.com. The 5 o'clock somewhere real estate investor podcast is a Sound Ideas Group production.